Information, text, and info. Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest. That's green to 200-200.
Listen, and you'll know.
First of all, if you haven't heard this yet, I love this.
Rod Arquette on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
Well, I don't know if you've paid much attention to this over the last couple of days, but have you started to see the ratings come in for the NBA Finals and baseball's All-Star Game last night? The All-Star Game hit a record low. The NBA Finals are down like 38%. And the ESPY Awards, this is the annual awards show that ESPN has every year, down to its lowest mark ever. Do you think the American people have had their fill of all these major league, you know, sports franchises and leagues going woke instead of just doing what they do best, and that's playing the game? Do you think? I doubt if they'll get it. I doubt if they'll wake up. But I think the American people have looked at, especially the NBA, but also Major League Baseball and the shenanigans about pulling the All-Star game out of Atlanta and moving it to Denver last night, and the ESPY Awards, which I've never really watched anyways. But it's pretty obvious, I think, that the American people are starting to say, you know what? You're wonderful athletes. You're talented men and women. Just go out and play the game that we watch you playing, and we enjoy watching you with your tremendous talents and your hard work that have paid off for you to get the level you're at and for you to make the money you make. And quit telling me what to believe in and how bad I am. That's what the American people are now saying. And the numbers are indicating that. Now, can the major leagues, you know, the NFL, NHL, NBA, Major League Baseball, can they get the numbers back? Maybe over time. But I think right now the American people are saying, we just don't want anything to do with you anymore. How are you, everybody? And hello, Utah. Welcome to the Rod Arquette Show on this Wednesday hump day. Here on the Rod Arquette Show, we get through this afternoon and we'll be headed into another great weekend. Looks like we may have some thunderstorm activity cooking up around the area. So be aware of the possible flooding that may take place. Man, when we get a storm here, we tend to get a really good doozy. Great show for you today. Coming up a little bit later. In just about, 15, 20 minutes from now, Dinesh D'Souza. I know a lot of you know who Dinesh is. He'll be joining us. He'll talk about the voting speech given by Joe Biden yesterday and the 1619 Project and Frederick Douglass. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Congressman Burgess Owens will join us. He wrote a terrific article today about why we aren't remembering the heroes of the American Revolution who were black. Never talk about them, and Burgess will join us and talk about that. Now, the numbers are in, and we're seeing more and more people being hospitalized, some to the ICU units with COVID-19. And probably about 95-99% of those people were not vaccinated. So, you know, doctors are saying, why aren't you getting vaccinated? And I have that same question. Now, I have been vaccinated. That was my choice, and you have to make your decision. I'm not going to tell you to go get vaccinated, but I would like to know tonight, and we'll get into this in the 5 o'clock hour, as to if you haven't been vaccinated, why not? And if you got vaccinated, maybe you were fearful of doing it, but you went ahead and did it anyways, why you did it? Because I think that's an interesting question. We may have hit the ceiling on vaccinations in this country. I think it's around 59-60%. And that may be about all we get in this country, because there are going to be a segment of the population not looking down at you at all who just say, I'm not getting vaccinated. And that is your choice. So we'll talk about that in the 5 o'clock hour. And then tonight, in the 6 o'clock hour, as you've listened to the show over the past several months now, iHeartMedia and our radio stations here with iHeartMedia, including this one, along with the Strong Auto Group and the state, have combined together to further promote the campaign called Live On. Live On is a campaign to prevent suicide here in the state of Utah. In the 6 o'clock hour tonight, we're going to have a town hall-like meeting I'll be interviewing some people who are involved in the efforts to prevent suicide, to help educate you about suicide and what's going on in the state right now. And there are a lot of great organizations out there to help people if you're interested in that and you need some help. So we'll take the last hour of the show tonight and dedicate it to a town hall-like show on the Live On campaign. So that's coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. All right, a few things I want to throw out, and then we'll take a break and then talk with Dinesh D'Souza here in a little bit. I couldn't believe this when I heard this today. The Department of Homeland Security Secretary, Alejandro Mayorkas, is responding to the ongoing crisis in Cuba. And here's what he said. I couldn't believe this today. That any Cubans that attempt maritime migration to the U.S. will not be allowed into the country. Will not be allowed into the country. Mayorkas, who himself is a Cuban, claimed that the Biden administration stands in solidarity with the Cuban people and their call for freedom from the repression and economic suffering that the Cuban authoritarian regime is causing. But he added, the Coast Guard, along with our state, local, and federal partners, are monitoring any activity that may indicate increases in unsafe and irregular maritime migration to the Florida Straits, including upper-minute vessels' departure from Florida to Cuba. And here's what he said. He said, the time is never right to attempt migration by sea. To those who risk their lives doing so, this risk is not worth the taking. Allow me to be clear. If you take the sea, you will not come to the United States. But if you walk half through Mexico and maybe through Honduras and Ecuador and Guatemala, we will open up the doors to you. Can you believe that? So here's Mayorkas, who's a Cuban himself, and he knows what's going on in Cuba. You can see the oppression. Marco Rubio the other day on the Senate floor gave a fantastic speech about what's going on in Cuba and the fact that, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, if we lift the sanctions against Cuba, you know, they wouldn't have the trouble down there. Do you know what's going to happen if we send them more food? If we send them more goods, you know what's going to end up? In the hands of the authorities. The Cuban people are not going to see it. The Cuban people would get their 6 eggs a month, and that's going to be about it. And that's not going to change. But for Mayorkas to sit here and say, you know, if you're in Cuba and you get on a vessel to try and go to Florida, you will not be welcomed in the United States. But, oh, because it's dangerous. You're risking your life. We don't want you to do that. But, oh, by the way, for anybody who wants to walk across Mexico and come into the U.S., in temperatures down there on the border, which are probably around 120 degrees, go ahead and do so. It's perfectly fine for us. That's what, you know, that's where you look at this and you wonder, who is in charge of this administration? Oh, a couple other notes on the administration. President Joe Biden, love him the way we do, has wasted no time in filling out his White House staff. He now employs 567 people working in the White House at a projected cost of $200 million over his 4-year term. Now, how does that compare to previous administrations? President Trump spent $164.3 million between 2017 and 2020. The Obama administration spent $188 million between 2009 and 2012, both of which were adjusted for inflation. Now, the current White House payroll is the most expensive in American history, and nearly $50 million in annual cost. There are, let's see, 190 more employees than the president, President Trump had. He had 377. Biden now has what? 567. And 80 more than Barack Obama, who had 487. So Joe Biden in the White House, and man, does he ever love a lot of staff around him. And one other note you need to take, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about these enhanced unemployment benefits that have been going on. An estimated 1.8 million Americans have said no to jobs so they could live off the unemployment benefits. That's according to a new survey. Nearly one third of those receiving unemployment insurance said they had turned down at least one job offer during the pandemic. Makes you feel good, doesn't it? All right, a lot to get to today. Dinesh D'Souza is scheduled to join us next, later on this hour. Congressman Burgess Owens will join us right here on the Rod Arquette Show and Utah's Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Listen and you'll know. I don't know about you and your marriage, but over the years, initially me and my wife couldn't agree on anything. Well, now we find ourselves agreeing on more and more all the time. Maybe it's the years we've been together, now more than 40 years together. Well, the one thing that we have always agreed on is our financial future and how to make sure that we have a good, secure financial future and we can retire when we're ready to call it quits. If you don't have one of those plans in place right now, I encourage you to reach out to Trajan Wealth. They're a wonderful group of people to work with, and they always put you first. Now, a lot of people believe that if you have a will, that your family and your children will be protected from probate. Not the case. Now, if you have a trust that clearly outlines everything, you are A-okay. And even at Trajan Wealth, they can help you do that. So what are you waiting for? Set up an appointment today. Reach out to the team at Trajan Wealth in their office in Draper and set up an appointment to find out what they can do for you. Call 801-899-7600. That's 801-899-7600 or online at Trajan Wealth.
And we'll help you build a full playlist with that same vibe. The free iHeart app. Number one for music, radio, and podcasts all in one.
All right, welcome back to the Rod Arquette Show on this Wednesday, Hump Day, here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, have you won that $1,000 in cash as of yet? The hot $1,000 summer cash giveaway going on right here on Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. The key word this hour is green, like a moolah, right? Green. All you do is have to text that word green to 200-200 for your chance to win. Utah Senator Mike Lee wrote a wonderful op-ed piece today in the Deseret News talking about critical race theory, and he says it attacks what it means to be American. And Mike wrote that the problem is not America's principles. The problem is rejecting them. Well, joining us on our newsmaker line to not only talk about CRT, but the 1619 Project is Dinesh D'Souza, well-known filmmaker, host of Dinesh D'Souza's podcast. And he's on our newsmaker line right now. Dinesh, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be on with you. I appreciate having me.
Dinesh, I noticed you were on last night. I think it was Fox News and with Laura Ingraham talking about Joe Biden's speech last night. What'd you make of that address last night or yesterday when he talked about voting rights, Dinesh?
Well, the speech was just downright absurd. It was almost the crazy uncle comes out of the basement sort of routine. And what I mean by that is, there was no attempt to grapple with the argument or even attempt to persuade. It was just one outrageous incendiary accusation after another. Now, if someone wants to talk about the issue of voter integrity, you have to address the fact that you're trying to achieve two separate things simultaneously. You're trying to make it easy for people to vote and harder for people to cheat. Now, you can't pretend that it's only about one thing and not the other, because democracy requires not only that people find it easy to cast their ballots, but that only the legitimate people, only eligible voters, do cast their ballots. Now, the Biden people focus on one side of it, making it easier to vote, and they pretend like there's no legitimacy to the other side. But what they've got to do, and what Biden did not do, is say, okay, let's go down the list. Voter ID, early voting, observe drop boxes, bring your own water. Now I'm going to prove to you that all these things are, you know, voter suppression measures. They are making it harder to vote without having any legitimate connection with voter security. But, of course, he didn't do that. He didn't even attempt to do that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Dinesh, do you think the White House is talking voting rights right now because they've got so many other struggles elsewhere? Crisis on the border. Now we have Cuba. We have inflation going out of control. Are they trying to distract the American people from some of the real issues that are impacting our everyday lives?
Well, I would put it a slightly different way. I think that they realize that the mainstream of the country is slipping away from them. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean they realize that they're losing support in the middle class. They're losing support among Hispanics. They've always had trouble with the Cubans and the Venezuelans, but they're now having trouble with Mexican Americans. Solid Democratic constituencies are pulling away. Black men are pulling away from the Democratic Party. So they need to sort of, you may almost say, fix the process and try to control it so that ultimately this erosion of support will not translate to devastating losses at the ballot box.
Dinesh, I want to talk to you about an article I know you wrote this week about Frederick Douglass and the 1619 Project. I noticed yesterday Kamala Harris, the vice president, compared those Texas Democrats who are now holed up in Washington to Frederick Douglass. What about Frederick Douglass, the 1619 Project, and critical race theory? Is it fair for the 1619 Project and supporters of CRT to compare their fight to Frederick Douglass?
Well, the champions of critical race theory and the 1619 Project, they love to point to a speech in which Frederick Douglass, who was invited by the Rochester Anti-Slavery Society, the ladies' division of it, to speak on July 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And Douglass began with this passionate and very sarcastic, you know, almost bashing of July 4th, because he said, "What to the slave is the 4th of July?" He goes, are you people mocking me by inviting me here? Because this is your Independence Day, but it's not mine." And so if you just read the beginning of the speech, you would think that here's a guy who's like, I mean, this guy should be like, you know, the author of the 1619 Project, because he's echoing their sentiments. But incredibly, as the speech goes on, Douglass makes a kind of U-turn. And by that, I mean, he starts considering the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And he says, far from these being supports and promoters of slavery, they are impediments to slavery. He goes, basically, the Declaration of Independence is a charter. He calls it a glorious liberty document. And he says that if you read the Constitution, there's not one word of support for slavery in it. So he goes, when we abolish slavery, we won't have to change one word in the Constitution. Why? Because the Constitution does not make any principled just gives no principled recognition to slavery at all. And Douglass uses a beautiful image. He talks about slavery being the scaffolding of a building to be taken down when the building is complete. And of course, both Douglass and Lincoln were instruments of taking slavery down. So they were part of completing the building, if you will. So here you have Frederick Douglass, who was, in a sense, giving a speech that was, in the end, an affirmation of his own patriotism. And this is a guy who would have, in the end, saluted the flag, sung the national anthem, and celebrated the 4th of July. And that's where the critical race theory people all want to get off the bus. They always suppress the second half of Frederick Douglass's speech because it runs antithetical to what they say and believe.
So they're only telling a half-truth about this Frederick Douglass speech, right, Dinesh?
Exactly. Not only are they telling a half-truth, they're suppressing the kind of punchline. I mean, imagine if someone's making an argument, the theme of which is that, you know, this man who is accused of committing these horrible crimes is not guilty, and all you do is you begin by saying, oh, yeah, these are the signs that point to guilt, but you don't say where the guy came out at the end of it. You're basically lying about Frederick Douglass, and that's what they do in order to try to claim this runaway slave and abolitionist for their side, when he actually was firmly on the Republican side. In fact, Douglass famously said, the Republican Party is the ship. Everything else is the open sea.
Dinesh, why is it that in America today, there are some black Americans today who blame everything on racism, but do not bother to look at the race itself, you know, the black culture itself, the fact that fathers aren't in homes anymore, there's violence. Why aren't black Americans willing to take a look within themselves at what's going on in their own community? Why are they reluctant to do that?
Well, I think what's happened is that there are a lot of blacks who recognize this cultural breakdown, the fact that you have, you know, broken families and you've got high crime rates. But what the Democrats do is they come along and they say, listen, why is that the case? How is it that your families are broken down? That must be due to slavery. Now, remarkably, although that seems to be plausibly true, it is in fact not true. For most of the 20th century, and so obviously after slavery, black families were relatively intact. In 1960, right around 1965, I believe it was, Daniel Patrick Moynihan did a study of the black family, and the illegitimacy rate for blacks in the United States was about 25%. And Moynihan called that a national crisis because it was so much higher than the white rate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, of course, the black rate today is close to 75%. So think about it. This obviously didn't happen during slavery. It happened during the era of liberalism and the welfare state. So the Democrats have destroyed the black family.
As always, Dinesh, very interesting hearing your opinion. Thank you for your time this afternoon.
My pleasure, as always.
All right, on our newsmaker line, that's Dinesh D'Souza. He is a filmmaker, a host of the Dinesh D'Souza podcast. Check it out. It's very, very good. And always great to have Dinesh on the show with us here on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know. Now, when we come back, Utah Congressman Burgess Owens is scheduled to join us. That's coming up next right here on the Rod Arkent Show and Utah's Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know. Now, you know, it was a couple of months ago, I think back in April, may even been March now, it seems longer than that, that I went to Hoops Vision. I went there because I remember I went to get my driver's license renewed and barely passed the eye test. And they said, you probably should go get your eyes looked at. You passed, but not by much. So I said, okay, time for a checkup. I hadn't had my eyes checked for a long time. I had LASIK many, many years ago, and I always thought everything was working just fine. Well, when I went to Hoops Vision, I found out I have cataracts. And they helped me begin the process of taking care of those cataracts with their cataract surgery. And let me tell you what, if you have questions, if, you know, your vision's a little blurred or it doesn't quite seem right, maybe a little cloudy, maybe it is time for you to head to Hoop Vision and have a one-on-one cataract surgery consultation today. The vision specialists there at Hoops are among the very best around the country, leading cataract surgeons with decades of experience and thousands of satisfied customers just like me. Why not set up an appointment today? Find out the condition of your eyes and what they can do for you. All you do.
And super easy to do. Start your playlist now on the iHeartRadio app. Number one for music, radio, and podcasts all in one.
Put me on a highway, the interstate, a dirt road to any place. Long as I'm long gone, chasing down some blue skies in my old truck.
Rod Arkent Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
All right, welcome back to the Rod Arkent Show. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, Utah hospitals are filling up. And health officials say that 95% of the COVID patients that they're now receiving, are now taking care of, weren't vaccinated. Why not? I just asked that. It's an individual choice, but I'd like to hear from you in the 5 o'clock hour. If, in fact, you haven't been vaccinated, the reasoning behind your decision, but also if you were thinking about not getting it and have decided to get vaccinated, why did you change your mind? That's coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Well, joining us on our newsmaker line right now is Utah Congressman Burgess Owens. He wrote a wonderful piece in Newsweek today about celebrating America's Black Patriots. When I was in school and going through elementary school, as I can recall, and middle school and high school, I never heard very much, if anything, about Black Patriots in the American Revolution. So why not? Burgess is on our newsmaker line right now. Burgess, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
Rod, very good. Look forward to chatting with my friend. It's a very, very important topic. It really is. Thank
well,
you so much.
Let's talk about it, because you write about a number of great Americans who were involved in the American Revolution who were Black, but we never hear about them. Why not, Burgess?
You know, that's a good question. And you have to wonder, you know, we're at a point in which we can go to the National Archives, we can go to the Internet, and yet those great men and women, as you go further into our history, they have done so many great things that have not been talked about. And it speaks to a couple of things, Rod. First of all, it speaks to the fact that they're white historians, people who respected these men enough that they were never lost in annals of history. And also the fact that it has been scrubbed. It's been literally scrubbed our history so that we can no longer look back and talk about how much we've done together, how much we've achieved. And I, when I think about what systemic racism truly is, it's not going to be those individual opportunities we have, times we get together and we experience bigotry. We all experience that at some point in life. It's when you take a race and demean it enough that they accept the fact they have not succeeded, they're not moving forward. We need to change that. And I look forward to being able to be part of that messaging to get the word out. This country is great for every country, every culture, every people. And we all can succeed with the same tenets of what success really means in this country.
Burgess, how would that change things, do you think? If, you know, when I was growing up, you were growing up, we were taught not only about the great heroes of the American Revolution who were white, but also some who were Black. Yeah. How would that have changed things, do you think?
It changes things because of this, and this is why history is so important, particularly American history, because of our foundation, our Judeo-Christian values was based on. We gain pride in our past, we know our history, because we see how much we've accomplished together. we gain appreciation for our present because we now see how far we've come and our vision for how far we can go. I can say that personally because I grew up in the Deep South when things were not as great as they are today. We were not assimilating, but I did grow up in a community that believed in meritocracy, believed in command and respect. And let me just real quickly, for those who have not read the article, Rod, just real quickly give a couple examples of what this really looks like.
Please do.
Okay. The very first martyr for the cause of freedom was a black man. His name was Crispus Attucks. He was a member of the Sons of Liberty. He was a leader. He was respected enough that he was the first person killed in the Boston Massacre. And because of the respect the people had around him, he was not lost, again, in annals of history. The very last fight for our freedom in the Revolutionary War, the Yorktown, there was a man named James Armistead. He was a double spy, a black man. He had the respect of George Washington, and the intel he brought back to Washington allowed them to win that last battle. If you look at the Washington, George Washington crossing the Delaware, at the very front, the tallest man in the battle, his name is Oliver Cromwell, a light-skinned farmer who fought in four separate battles. This is throughout our history, and the true systemic racism is to purposely scrub our history of people who succeeded so we can no longer go back and say, first of all, how much we've accomplished together, but the fact that we were part of this great building, this great country, the United States of America, and that's why we're so proud of our flag and everyone who's actually fought and died to make our country what it is today.
I know one of Mike Lee's heroes in the American Revolution is also a black American, a black woman, I believe, and he has written about her in his history. What would it do for us if we learn more about this and understand there were heroes, both white and black, in American history and the forming of this great country?
Well, it brings pride back. You have to understand what we're up against. Our country is about assimilating. Every generation gets better and better, looking at each other inside out versus outside in. We have to have our history to be part of that. It was Karl Marx who stated very simply, the first battleground is rewriting of history. If they allow the left, those who do not love our country, those who hate the things that we believe in, God, country, family, respect for women and authority, if you allow them to have the narrative, we will turn against each other. We'll turn our kids into being racist kids and then wonder whatever happened. So this is very, very important. And by the way, I'm looking at every Sunday doing a Sunday series on my Twitter feed called The Council of Black Patriots. And I want to make sure that Americans are seeing. By the way, this will go on every single day for the rest of my life, and we still will not fill the pages of what's available for us to understand how successful we've been as a nation and as a people. Once we understand that, Rod, we realize that the American way is for everyone. As long as you tie yourself into a belief in meritocracy, be the best you can be, and have faith that if you go to overcome obstacles, things will work out. Things will fall in place. We need to understand that because that is truly the American way.
Boy, and I think if the public had the information that you're sharing with us today about these black heroes during the American Revolution and use that as they counter this debate over critical race theory, this could be a very valuable tool for a lot of people, I would think. Wouldn't it? Wouldn't it, Burgess?
It's extremely, extremely valuable because what we have to do as Americans, number one, we have to make sure the black community is not angry and upset because of, quote, them being victims. We also need to make sure that white Americans are not feeling ashamed of our history. Our history is such a rich place in which no one else, no other country in history of mankind has done, we have accomplished. And all we have to do is just tell our story. Tell our story and good things happen. We start looking at each other a different way. We see ourselves as a team. We might disagree on the way we get to certain solutions, but we believe as Americans we have something very, very unique, and it all starts off with a history that we can share together and realize how far we've come and how far we can go with just keeping the American dream alive.
Burgess, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. You're always so optimistic about this great country of ours. Thank you, Burgess, for your time tonight. Thank you, Burgess.
Rod, thank you for the opportunity, my friend. I really appreciate it. All the best.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Utah Congressman Burgess Owens talking about this article today. And I'll get this up on the blog if we have time. It's called Let's Celebrate America's Black Patriots. And it's interesting. There are tremendous stories. The nation's archives are filled with these stories, but they were not included in the history books. Interesting. All right, more coming up on the Rod Arquette Show in Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, all right, summer is here, weather is hot, right? You know, and you want to do things, but you find that oftentimes some of the more important issues are sidetracked because you've got other things to do around the home. One of them could be your roof. Now, Roof Tech has been out to my house. They've helped me understand the havoc that this weather and winter especially can do to your home, like ice dams and leaky gutters and other type of problems, which is why they asked me to tell you about their summertime tune-up. It's going on right now and just for a few more weeks. Roof Tech will come to your home. They'll perform a 20-point inspection and tune up your flashings, transitions, roof vents, the parts of your roof that have the issues most often. They can even address clogged rain gutters and make sure that your roof is good for this summer. They'll even go over options to extend the life of your roof and to make sure your attic is well ventilated to keep you cool and save you money. You should call the pros at Roof Tech right now. Schedule your summer tune-up on your roof for just $99. All you do is have to dial #250, that's #250, and say Roof Tech.
833-ED-NO-FUN. For a free consultation and trial treatment, a $650 value. Put the happy back in your relationship.
All right, welcome back to the Rod Arquette Show here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, years and years ago, and this is really going to date me, folks, but I'm an old guy, I'll admit it. That's fine. There used to be a television game show. This will really date me. This was in the days of black and white television. All right, that's how old this was. And I was there when it was black and white television. Like I know some of you were as well, so be proud of it, right? We've made it this far. There was a show called I've Got a Secret. Anyone remember that show, I've Got a Secret? Remember that show? Someone would come on, and the panel would question that person and try and figure out what their secret was, right? Well, secrets may be fun, but that apparently does not stop the average adult from keeping two juicy pieces of information locked away. A survey of 2,000 British adults asked the respondents about their deepest secrets. And the average adult keeps two embarrassing secrets from everyone they know. Now, it turns out that mental health, hygiene, and affairs top the list of things that we tend to hide from each other. Now, put together by one poll, the survey reveals mental health issues are the number one most common secret among adults. Shouldn't be that way. You should be able to talk about it, in my opinion. After that, an embarrassing or cringe-worthy incident comes in at number two, with a third of respondents admitting to keeping such mistakes to themselves. Meanwhile, I love this one, close to one in five adults keep their secret simply to avoid relationship issues, and just over one in ten even admit to keeping a secret to avoid police scrutiny. Wow, that's bad. So let me list just a few of these top 25 secrets that most people keep from friends and family. And let's see if you can find a secret that you're keeping from yourself. Number one, as I mentioned, mental health issues. Maybe you wrestle with depression or other issues, and maybe you're keeping that away from people. Number two, embarrassing incidents. Trying to think what that would be for me. Can't think of one. Internet history. You're hiding that. Hopefully you aren't looking at porn when you shouldn't be. Eating and snacking habits. Why do you hide that from people? I mean, I have weird habits. You know, aren't there comfort snack foods out there that you have? Why do you hide that? Hygiene habits. I could understand that. Number of past sex partners. May not want to share that with your spouse. Bank and credit card statements. Keep those secret. I think most people tend to keep their financial situation secret as well, and that's fine. Number eight, faking an illness in the past to avoid a commitment. You ever done that? You know, fake sickness, calling to work, saying you're sick, or not showing up somewhere, maybe not going out with some friends because maybe you don't like them, and you fake being sick. Affairs and infidelities. It's down there at number 9, one-night stands at number 10, illness 11, smoking habits. I don't know how you hide that anymore. Faking an illness to avoid work, money spent on food, fears, and phobias. Those are some of the secrets that this British survey found that most people keep away from them. Interesting, isn't it? All right. Now, when we come back in the 5 o'clock hour, oh, don't forget, tonight we've got another full hour of our town hall meeting on suicide prevention here in the state of Utah. the iHeartMedia team and the state of Utah and Strong Auto Group, it's a public-private partnership, have teamed together this year to really try and educate everybody about suicide here in the state of Utah and prevent suicide. And coming up tonight in the 6 o'clock hour, we are going to devote the entire time to talking about the Live On campaign, but more specifically as to ways that you can get help. Now, we've done weekly interviews now since April or May on this, maybe earlier than that. I have found out, I have learned so much about suicide, why people die from suicide, why people consider suicide, you know, why they go down that path. And the numerous, and I mean numerous, organizations and agencies that are out there and available to help you. And we'll talk more about that in the 6 o'clock hour tonight in our live town hall meeting that we're going to dedicate an hour to the Live On campaign and talk more about suicide prevention. We invite you to stay tuned. That's coming up 1 hour from now. In the coming hour, hospitals are filling up. The numbers are rising about positive COVID
text and info. Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest. That's game to 200-200.
We're live, we're local, and we're everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. How are you, everybody? Welcome back. Second hour of the Rod Arkent Show with you on this hump day. It is Wednesday, getting ready to head into looks like another hot weekend. Sorry about that, folks. Just the way it is this year for all of us. A reminder, 1 hour from now, we're going to do something different. We've done this once already this year. We're going to do it again, and I think we've got a third one scheduled. We're going to have like a town hall-like meeting on the air, and we're going to be talking about preventing suicide here in the state of Utah. We have partnered up with the Strong Auto Group and the state of Utah to help promote the Live On campaign. Now, the Live On campaign is designed to help prevent suicide here in the state, to help people who are struggling emotionally, to get through tough times, to talk to people about the struggles they're facing, and to prevent suicide. It has been a big issue, especially among young people here in the state of Utah. And we're going to devote another full hour to talk about suicide, to talk about the help that is available out there, and what you need to do, and how you can help others. And maybe right now you're struggling and you don't know where to turn, and we'll help you with that. So that's coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, of course, all part of our work with the Strong Auto Group, iHeartMedia, and the state of Utah on the Live On campaign. That's coming up. All right, there was an interesting discussion a couple of days ago on the CBS Morning News with Morning News anchor Gail King. And during an interview with Dr. Anthony Fauci, if you can believe anything he says anymore, King said that she isn't planning on allowing family members who have opted not to have a COVID-19 vaccine attend Thanksgiving dinner at her home. Say that again. Gail King, CBS Morning News anchor, says if a member of her family has opted not to get a vaccine, a COVID-19 vaccine this year, they will not be invited to attend the Thanksgiving dinner. King then asked Fauci what concerned him about the new coronavirus Delta variant, and the administration's chief medical officer responded, said, first of all, the virus can transmit much more readily from person to person, given the number of the people in the country who are not vaccinated. That really is the concern. And then you see these numbers today. There are, 231 Utahns who are hospitalized right now because of COVID-19. And it is a leading doctor here confirmed that most people who are now being hospitalized by this have not been vaccinated. He is with the Intermountain Healthcare, and he said the vast majority of the patients that are being admitted are in the unvaccinated population. He goes on to say, from a caregiver's point of view, that's just really disappointing because there are preventable hospitalizations. 471 Utahns were diagnosed with COVID-19. That was according to the Department of Health. Three more people have died in the state from the disease. Now, we have a new variant, and from what I understand, I am read up about all of this, the variant tends to attack younger people. Not sure why, but apparently it does. And those are, that's a segment of the population who kind of think, you know, they don't need to worry about this. They aren't getting vaccinated. And that's why this Delta variant seems to be attacking them. Now, I've been very upfront with all of you. I have been vaccinated. Both my wife and I, we got the Pfizer vaccination, you know, the two-shot tango. And we've done that. But that was the decision that we made. And we talked about this a lot. I mean, we aren't big fans of vaccinations to begin with. But, you know, we researched it. We talked to people. We talked to, I even think we may have had a conversation with our doctor in asking him, should we, in fact, get vaccinated? And we thought about this, and we finally said, all right. We know this is still in the experimental stage, and it is. I don't think it's been fully certified by the FDA as of yet. But my wife and I decided to go get vaccinated. We got both doses. And after that, you know, the day after 24 hours is a little rough because it feels like you're getting COVID again. But after we recovered, we haven't had any problems since then. Now, my wife this week has struggled with a bit of a cold. Pretty good one by the sounds of it, as I hear her cough every night. And she decided yesterday, because she's worried about COVID coming back and hitting her again. We both had it, by the way, around Christmas time last year. She decided to have a COVID-19 test again. And it came back negative. So what she's dealing with now is just a cold. And, you know, it will run its course the way most colds do. And she'll be back to normal. But the question I would have is I keep on seeing these stories, again, about our numbers climbing. And about the number of people who are testing positive for COVID-19. Some of them being admitted to the hospital now because of COVID-19. I thought to myself, why aren't people getting vaccinated? Now, I understand there are some of you out there who just don't agree with any vaccinations. That's your choice. I'm not trying to force this on anyone. Because that, in my opinion, has to be an individual choice. You have to study, you have to research, and then you decide whether or not you are going to get vaccinated. You look at these numbers, and I'm not giving these numbers out to scare anybody. I just want to help you understand what's going on. So, I thought to myself, I want to find out from people out there today, listeners to the show, about the vaccination and their thoughts about it. And I don't, you know, let's not make fun of each other on this. I'm not opening up the phone so you can attack someone else who hasn't been vaccinated or vice versa. But I'd like to find out from you today, if in fact you've been vaccinated, if you were a little leery of it to begin with. And I was. My wife, you know, we've heard other, you know, kind of horror stories out there about people who are vaccinated. We were a little skeptical about going and doing it, but we decided to do it after doing our homework. But I want to find out, first of all, people who haven't been vaccinated, tell our listeners why you haven't. I don't want to get too technical and all the research, blah, blah, blah. But I'd like to know your feelings as to why you didn't. And I would like to hear from somebody who said, you know, I'm against vaccinations. I'm not going to do it. And then you decide to do it. What changed your mind, if it did at all? 888-570-8010. 888-570-8010. Or on your cell phone, dial #250. I'd love to hear from you. And this idea that, you know, Gayle King, CBS This Morning anchor or host, not really a news anchor, telling Fauci earlier this week that because there are members of her family who have opted out not to get a vaccine, they won't be invited to her home for Thanksgiving dinner. I just think that's going a little far myself, but, you know, it's her call. And I want to get back to this. This all comes down to an individual choice, does it not? That's what this comes down to. An individual choice. And you shouldn't be forced. You shouldn't be coerced. You shouldn't be, you know, scared into getting a vaccine or not getting a vaccination. It really is up to you. So I want to find out from you tonight about COVID-19 and your decision to get vaccinated or not to get vaccinated. 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010, or on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod. We'll get to your calls here in just a minute. Now, I do have a word for you tonight from the COVID-19 Task Force. We all know the pandemic isn't over yet. We wish it were, but it's not over, right? And we all know we still have some work to do. That's why the COVID-19 Task Force, the state, wants you to make sure that you get a second dose if your first dose was from Moderna or Pfizer. The vaccine is much more effective, with both doses. Now, please continue to be conscientious. The virus is spreading. We can see the numbers going up again. Currently, Utah has the sixth highest case rate in the nation at 8 cases over 100,000 people. The surge is largely, again, in unvaccinated people who are being infected and hospitalized at 6 times the rate of vaccinated people. This is information from the COVID-19 Task Force. If you want to find out the very latest information, go to their website.
New each time you listen. Listen and subscribe for free to Newt's World on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rod Arquette Show with you on this Wednesday afternoon here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, now you've heard the stories about our hospitals filling up with COVID-19 patients, and most of those patients, according to hospital officials, weren't vaccinated. I think the number here in the state of Utah right now is a 59%. I may have to check with Abby. 59% of the people who are now fully vaccinated, a little bit higher people who have received at least one vaccination. I'm just wondering if we've reached the ceiling. There's just a percentage of the population out there who won't be vaccinated for a variety of reasons. And as we see these numbers climb, there are a lot of people who say, you know, they'll look at the numbers, they'll hear the story about these people are being hospitalized because they haven't been vaccinated, you know, and I thought, okay, why aren't people getting vaccinated now? The vaccinations have been out since, what, near the end of the year and fully implemented in, what, January and February with the vaccinations. A lot of people have been vaccinated, including myself, my wife, and my family. But there are people who I know who haven't been vaccinated and don't want to be vaccinated. So the question is simply, why not? 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010, or on your way home, or on your cell phone, I should say. Many of you are on your way home. Dial #250 and say, hey, Rod, to the phones we go. Let's begin in Springville with Richard tonight. Richard, welcome to the Rod Arquette Show.
Yes, sir. Thank you for paying for this call. Yeah, I've got a better system, I believe, than the vaccine. I use the holistic system, and I was based on information and lots of reading, mainly from Dr. Joel Fuhrman, and reading the book, The China Study,
mm-hmm.
And it's just building up that immune system. And now, if I get a scratchy throat or I think I'm going to get something like a cold or something. I, you know, get the garlic out. I get the cayenne pepper. And, you know, and I just
you
just
go
knock
at it
out.
Yeah, you go after it.
Me.
Yeah, you go after it, right, Richard?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And if I get a fever, I do not take aspirin. I don't have aspirin. I can't remember the last time I had an aspirin or Tylenol. It must have been maybe 40, 45 years.
Wow. What do you
also
do?
Building up your...
What do you do in that case? If you need an aspirin or a Tylenol, what do you do?
I don't ever get headaches.
Really?
Mean,
wow.
If I do get it, I mean, I live a pretty good life, I suppose. And I'm 70 years old.
Yeah, good for you. All right, Richard, thank you. Let's go to Joe in Draper tonight and see what he has to say. Joe, how are you? Welcome to the Rod Arquette Show.
Hey, I'm well. Thanks, Rod. Just wanted to point out the main reason that I am not getting vaccinated is I don't trust the science, and there's so much misinformation out there. Oh, you know, early on last year, oh, the hospitals are overrun. You never knew how many people were really in the hospital. I'm sure we've all had friends and nurses that work there, and some of them, yeah, there are quite a few. Some of them, they're not as full as they should be. But the message that also comes from our political leaders, I don't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I trust them on this issue when there's so many other things that are iffy. We can do research. It's quick and readily on the internet. So that's my point, and thank you for your time.
All
I appreciate it.
All right, Joe. And I think, Joe, I think you reflect the mood of a lot of people. The trust factor with health officials in this country has dipped amazingly simply because of the conflicting messages that we got at the beginning here. And a lot of people are saying, wait a minute, you tell me to wear a mask, now you tell me not to wear a mask. Tell me to get a shot, tell me not to get a shot. I mean, what is it? And I think trust is very, very important when it comes to the issue of a vaccination. Let's go to Clinton and hear what Kerry has to say tonight here on the Rod Arquette Show. Hi, Kerry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my reason's pretty simple. I've already had COVID,
mm-hmm.
so I feel like I've got the natural immunities, and therefore I don't need the shot. It's pretty basic, pretty simple. I remember my daughter, when I was getting her caught up on vaccinations for kindergarten, she had missed the chicken pox vaccination. I said she had already had the chicken pox. They said, okay, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was good enough then to have natural immunities, it should be just as effective with COVID-19.
Kerry, how severe was your case of COVID? Did it hit you pretty hard?
Yes, it hit my husband harder, though. He actually had to go to the InstaCare emergency room, and he's a very healthy guy,
mm-hmm.
super, super healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got progressively worse and worse and worse for a good week. Really scary, but he did turn a corner eventually. So he had it super bad. I had it mildly bad, the aches, the pains, everything that goes along with it. And mine lasted for about a week. His lasted really, really 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But we both turned the corner. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But you've had it and you feel you don't need the vaccination.
Absolutely.
All right. All right, Kerry. Thank you. Appreciate your phone call. Let's go to Murray and hear from Rita tonight here on the Rod Arquette Show. Hi, Rita. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. Your thoughts on this, Rita?
So I am not vaccinated, and the reason I'm so against, well, the reason I feel like I'm against it is because the government is pushing it so hard. I don't like how the government is overstepping their boundaries in people's personal lives, the incentives, and the fact that you can't go to a game unless you, or a concert unless you have the vaccine. Like, that's just insanity to me.
Yeah.
There's too much. You know, I don't agree with that. I don't think that the government should be pushing it on anybody. Maybe if they weren't, I would, but it just doesn't sound right,
doing. When you say you feel the government is forcing it upon you, explain that a little bit more. What do you mean by that, Rita?
Like, they are, some people, well, the door-to-door,
okay,
like,
yeah,
Jen Psaki.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That how they're going to be going door to door and asking people about the COVID shot. What the heck is that?
Yeah, amen to that.
You know, I don't think that's okay. That's weird.
Yeah, it is weird, and it's not okay, Rita. Thank you very much for your phone call. Let's go to Michelle, who's in American Fort tonight, and talk to her about this. Michelle, welcome to the Rod Arquette Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You are welcome.
So my doctor advised against it, and my doctor is very mainstream. Actually, my whole doctor's office supports all other vaccines, flu shots, everything, but they're advising all the patients in their office not to get this one because, one, the mRNA technology does not sit well, and two, they say, I mean, you can get COVID, you can get infected with COVID and transmit it, even with getting the COVID shot. So why would they want anyone injecting themselves with something that hasn't been studied long term?
Were you, Michelle, were you surprised when your doctor said don't get it?
I was very surprised.
I would be too. Interesting.
But actually, I'm very glad now. At first, I was surprised, but I have immediate family members and my friend's parents have been severely injured since getting the COVID shot. So I'm very grateful that.
Yeah.
They are advising people to just wait. It's not FDA approved. And I agree, it has not been studied long term. My friend's mom, she developed welts all over her body.
Mm.
Her legs started swelling up so much that she couldn't walk and she was hospitalized. And my other friend's mom had a heart attack right after hers. And she's a nurse. And her doctor said, you are not to get any more booster shots.
Wow.
Because they're seeing so many heart problems.
Wow.
So. Yeah. My aunt's sister died after hers.
Oh, that's
awful.
She's
54 years old.
That's awful, Michelle. Thank you for sharing that. Interesting that her doctor would advise her against it and kind of caught her off, surprised her a little bit. All right, more of your calls coming up. 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010. On your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod, we're talking to you today about your decision not to be vaccinated, or maybe your decision to be vaccinated after you thought about it more and more. Initially, you were opposed to it, but then you decided to go ahead and get a vaccination shot. Why did you change your mind? 888-570-8010 or on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod. The real estate market. Did you see that the median price of a home here along the greater Wasatch Front has gone up yet again? That means the real estate market is still as hot as ever. And finding a home, demand is high, inventory is very low. And you're thinking, well, what a time to sell my home. But, you know, is that the best decision to make? And if you make that decision, why not to turn to somebody who I trust, and I know you will trust as well, somebody with knowledge and experience. I'm talking about Justin Udy and Justin Udy and Team Real Estate. Now, Justin has a 14-day guarantee. You list your home with Justin, and if it is not under a contract, within those 14 days, he will sell it for no commission whatsoever. And he's got a great team behind him who know how to stage, how to market, who know how to do all that paperwork, and together, how to help you decide the offer that you have received. And you'll receive probably many of them, which one is the best for you and your family. So check them out today. Reach out online to Justin.
New each time you listen. Listen and subscribe for free to Newt's World on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, give me back my freedom. Give me back my land.
The Rod Arquette Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
In just about 25 minutes from now, we'll begin our one-hour town hall meeting as we talk about suicide here in the state of Utah. It's all about our Live On campaign with the Strong Auto Group in the state of Utah to educate you about suicide and what you can do to prevent it. We're talking to various organizations, and we'll do so again tonight for a full hour and talk about suicide here in the state of Utah, and we invite you to stay with us. By the way, you know, one common sense thing that I think has come out of this pandemic, I don't know about you, but remember they said there were a couple things they wanted us to do. One was to socially distance, which we found out really wasn't smart at all. One, to wear a mask, which the debate over masks is going to go on forever and ever and ever. But the other thing was to wash your hands, and wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. And I find myself washing my hands more frequently and for longer periods of time than I used to. So maybe that's a plus that came out of all this stuff that we've had to deal with. All right, we're asking you right now, because the numbers are going up here in the state of Utah, people testing positive for COVID-19, the hospitalizations are up a little bit, and most of the people who are being hospitalized are people who did not get a vaccination. Now, I did. I've explained to you that was a personal decision, and it's your personal decision as well. But I want to find out if you did or if you didn't and why so. 888-570-8010 or on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod, back to the phones we go. Let's talk to Brian in American Fork. Brian, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. How are you, Rod?
Good. Thank you, Brian. What? Weigh in on this. What happened to you, or what did you decide?
So I was somewhat hesitant to get the vaccine initially, but then I did end up going and getting it. So I guess the backstory is I actually had COVID-19. I think it was around the November-December time frame. So I already had it, and I kind of figured, you know, I may not be high risk at this point for you know, getting reaffected. And I also, maybe just a little bit funny, but have you ever seen the movie I Am Legend?
Yeah, a long time ago. I haven't seen it for a long time. Is that the one where he's alone in the world or something like that?
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I haven't seen it for a long time, and I saw it, you know, maybe a year ago, and it just kind of made me laugh. it's not funny, really, but, you know, the government finds that they found the cure to cancer, and they're all excited, and then, you know, everyone gets injected, and they end up turning into zombies.
Yeah.
And anyway, Will Smith is one of the last people alive. So I kind of watched that. I'm like, man, you know, like maybe I'll just, you know, bide my time here a little bit and not be the first one in line. Plus, you know, early on, I wanted to give people that, you know, felt they really wanted it a chance when there was a lot of people, a lot of demand for the vaccine. But once it kind of slowed down and there was not as much demand and, you know, it was easy to get appointments, I started thinking more seriously, well, should I get it? Should I not get it? And I was a little bit concerned that the science seemed a little bit rushed. I mean, frankly, it seems miraculous that they were able to come up with a vaccine and within about a year's time, given the way things normally are. But I in the end, just kind of decided, you know, if everybody else is getting it or 70% of the world is getting it and they all, you know, get super sick or has terrible side effects, I guess I'll just be one of the 70%, which isn't generally a good way to live your life, but I just figured it's really that bad, yeah. You know.
So like, you decided
maybe,
to get it.
Maybe I won't be the only one.
All right. Yeah. All right, Brian. Thank you. Brian decided to get it after thinking about it for a little while. Let's go to Freedom, Wyoming and talk with Kerry on this tonight. Kerry, how are you? Welcome to the show. Great name for a town, by the way. I've driven through Freedom, Wyoming, and I love the name of the town.
It's a great one. It's
yeah,
tiny.
It is. Yeah, it's tiny. That's okay. That's okay. Now, I want to ask you, first of all, Kerry, do you have a Kinko copy machine in your town? I'm just checking to make sure.
No, but our post office one.
There we go. There we go. There we go. All right, Kerry, weigh in on this. What do you say?
So I'm sure I had, and I was not diagnosed, the virus in November of 19. And so I did not get any vaccinations. So I was totally convinced. But the thing that I wanted to weigh in on was your listeners need to go to Dr. Tenpenny and just look her up on your internet search. And she is somebody who has some more information. She says that now people are going to be getting sick anywhere from 4 months to a year in 4 months from getting their shots, and it will not be able to be traced to the virus. So it'll be, but the vaccination is going to cause that. And she's very, very specific in how the vaccination attacks your system.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kills cells, basically, I guess. So I hope your people will get online because, I mean, it's totally made me convinced I am never going to take a vaccine. Plus, she also defines it's not really a vaccine. Do you know about that? Have you heard that?
I had not heard about that. No, I understood it was an experimental drug right now. I did not hear it wasn't a vaccine. We've always been told it's a vaccine.
Yeah, she will debunk that as well on this video. It's something about a vaccine has to have something living in it, but it's not. It's a synthetic something that they've made up.
Okay.
Out of all the chemicals.
Real quick, Kerry, what is that video again that you recommend people take a look at if they have any questions?
Just look up Dr., and I just did Dr.,
mm-hmm.
Tenpenny, and it's exactly how it sounds, Tenpenny.
Penny. All right, Kerry, thank you. Appreciate the information. Let's go back to the phone. Let's talk with Chris in Clinton tonight. Chris, how are you? Welcome to the Rod Arquette Show.
Good, Rod, thank you.
What are your thoughts on this, Chris?
So I had mixed feelings about it all year long, and I decided that I wasn't going to get it. And then I actually was recently diagnosed with MS, and my doctor advised me that even if I got the vaccine, my body doesn't develop the antibodies like it should.
Mm-hmm.
So I struggled with it. Should I get it? Because it doesn't even matter. But if I don't get it, then I can't fly anywhere. I can't go on a cruise. So I ended up getting it, even though it probably won't work.
Yeah. But because you've been diagnosed with MS, he said he recommended you get it. Is that what your doctor said? Or did he say, well, that's really up to you to decide?
No, sorry. Maybe I said it wrong. So the medication that I'm on, because I have MS,
mm-hmm.
it prevents my body from developing the antibodies like a normal person.
Okay. Now I understand, Chris. Well, Chris, good luck in your battle against MS. Hang in there, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Chris from Clinton joining us here on the Rod Arquette Show. More of your calls coming up about vaccinations. If you've had one, why did you decide to get it? If you haven't, why have you decided not to get it? 888-570-8010 on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod. How's the summer going as far as the air conditioning is concerned? Had it break down at all? Hope not. But this is just a reminder again that during these hot, hot summer months, you know, how many of you can live without the air conditioning? We've had it in our home for a very, very long time, so used to it. Before that, remember the days of the swamp coolers? Some of you may still have those out there, and we can use those because of the dry conditions we have here in the state. But if you have an air conditioner, it's always a good idea to get it serviced. You know, maybe wait now till the end of the summer. Have them come in and look at it, or next year. And the people who should be looking at it, Any Hour Services. A great team of people. They do electrical, plumbing, heating, and air, of course. And they serve an area from Ogden to Nephi and from Tooele over to the Park City, Heber area. Now, Any Hour Services, what I love, there are many things that we could talk about. But one of them is no pressure. The technicians who are there to fix whatever problem you have are not trying to sell you anything. They simply want to educate you. They give you options, and then they let you make the decision that is really best for your situation. And if a product purchase is involved, if that's an option, you're going to meet with a supervisor, not with one of their technicians. So find out more what Any Hour Services can do for you. Just Google Any Hour Services or go
Any Hour Services. You can even schedule online at anyhourservices.com. No one helps more homeowners than Any Hour Services.
All right, back to the phones we go. We're taking a few more calls before we break at the top of the hour for news about your decision to get vaccinated, why you made that decision, or a decision that you decided to get vaccinated after first thinking, maybe I'm not going to do it. 888-570-8010 on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod, back to the phones we go. And let's talk with Rachel in Farmington tonight here on the Rod Arquette Show. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, good evening, Rod. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What are your thoughts on this, Rachel?
Well, so my son goes to New Ames up at Weber State, mm-hmm. Northern Utah Academy of Mathematics, Science, and Engineering School. And for his health class assignment, he had to do some research on Johnson & Johnson, any kind of lawsuits that had been happening. And he found out that they had paid out two different lawsuits, cash payouts, so that they could avoid going to court for accusations, two of them having asbestos in their baby powder. And yeah, went ahead, you know, even though there were some warnings, you know, like, be careful, you could get blood clots with this. They said there were only like six people that got it. So I'm like, I'll go ahead and get it. I wanted to get one and done. I don't want to have to go back and get another shot, right? Who wants mm-hmm. to get two shots? Mm-hmm. So I went ahead and got it because my other choice was, okay, well, you can get the shot or you can just keep wearing a mask at work. And I work full time, 8 hours a day in a grocery store. I don't want to wear a mask. I want to be able to breathe oxygen. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went ahead and got it. And then a week later, so I got it on May 13th. And a week later, I started my period. Okay. Research.
I'm losing you, Rachel.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm losing you.
So,
okay. Go ahead.
Oh,
repeat
are you
it
there?
Again. Yeah.
Okay,
we're here.
So I was just saying that I didn't do the research where I learned later after I had blood clots that women have been reporting irregular menstrual cycles and blood clots mm-hmm. in their period blood. Well, I had my normal period, right, for I bled for approximately, 4 to 6 days, and then I stopped. I'm like, okay, I'm done. Yay, 2 days, I didn't bleed. And then I started my period again, and for 5 days in a row, Rod, I had a large clot that could fit in the palm of my hand.
Ooh.
Because I wear a cup. I don't wear tampons.
Mm-hmm.
So my cup, I could actually like pour it out into the toilet, and I took a picture of it, and I went to the ER after 5 days of having a clot every single day.
Wow.
And they said, oh, you're going through perimenopause. You need to get some progesterone or you're going to keep bleeding. Either take it orally or get an IUD, which will administer the amount of progesterone you need directly to the source, so you're only taking a fifth of the progesterone that your body would have to take
wow.
versus orally. If you take it orally, you have to take 80% more progesterone because it's more
Rachel, you've got about 20
spread throughout your body.
You've got
So I just wanted to let you know that I'm really, really want everyone to be very aware that the J&J shot also just came out with another warning about some kind of brain problem that you could have.
All right, Rachel, thank you for sharing your story. You've got to be careful, folks. Like Rachel said, do as much research as you feel you need to. And again, I'm going to say this is a personal decision. I'm not advocating it one way or another. I'm just saying if you make the decision, go ahead and get your vaccination. I understand if you don't. It is a personal choice. The government should not be trying to force it down us. You must decide. All right, when we come back, we'll continue our series of town hall meetings.
The money you'll save and the healthier life you could lead. The way to quit is the first step. For a personalized plan, visit waytoquit.org.
All right, we are live, we are local, and we are everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. How are you, everybody? Welcome back to the third hour of the Rod Arquette Show on this Wednesday, 14th day of July, if you can believe it. It's hump day. We get through today, and we're headed into the weekend, and nobody complains about weekends, do they? Now, this hour, we've done this already once. We're going to do it another time before we wrap up the year. I think if you've listened to this show long enough now, you know, you understand that iHeartMedia, and that includes not only this radio station, but our other radio stations in the iHeart family, and the state of Utah and the Strong Auto Group have joined together in what is being called a public-private partnership this year to help educate people about suicide here in the state of Utah and to prevent suicide. It is a major issue that, you know, there have been a lot of coverage over the last couple of years about suicide and why Utah, what we can do about it. And this is really an effort on our part to educate you, to, you know, give you some instruction, maybe some insight, and maybe some help. There may be some of you out there who are struggling right now emotionally and trying to figure out, you know, what is available. The one thing I've learned during all of this is there are a lot of various organizations who are doing just some absolutely tremendous work in trying to help people out. And we are going to spend the next hour talking about it and helping to educate you on, you know, suicide in the state, what you can do to prevent suicide. I saw a number today. There was a story today, and this is the challenge that we face. This is a national story, but it said officials are blaming the pandemic for the record number of drug overdose deaths in 2020. CDC data shows that deaths skyrocketed to 93,000 last year. That is up from 72,000 in 2019, an increase of close to 30%. It's a real challenging time for a lot of people out there, and I want to welcome to our microphones today, first of all, Christina Grove. She is a therapist at the Urban Indian Center here in Salt Lake City. Christina, how are you, and welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, thank you.
And also joining us tonight is Carlos Palamo. He is a Behavioral Health Science Health Day Supervisor at Community Crisis Intervention and Support Services. Carlos, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, happy to be here.
All right, let's start off, Christina. Tell us about the Urban Indian Center and your role there at the center, if you would.
Yeah. So the Urban Indian Center of Salt Lake was formerly known as the Indian Walk-In Center. Mm-hmm. So many people may have known our organization by that name. We've been in operation since about 1974, I think. Initially, it was social services that we were provided, some education services, some job assistance. Over time, currently, we offer preventative medical. We have a limited clinic.
Mm-hmm.
We have outpatient behavioral health and substance use program, and we also offer youth and family services as well. So we've really expanded the services that we provide. My job, I started at the Urban Indian Center. So I am an enrolled member of the Ute Tribe. I'm also part Hopi. And this is my dream job, working at the Urban Indian mm-hmm. Center. I grew up in the city. My parents both came from different reservations. My mom is from northern Arizona. My father was a member of the Ute Indian tribe. And so, but met at college and raised our kids here in the city. So my experience is a little bit different than my parents and my family. But some of the challenges, you know, growing up Native American, even in the city, are similar.
Mm-hmm.
And so One of the things, well, not one of the things, but what we strive to do at the Urban Indian Center is really try to build community, provide services, and really provide a home for Native Americans that are living in the city.
All right, and we'll find out more about the challenges that you are facing. I want to talk to Carlos as well. Carlos, with Community Crisis Intervention and Support Services, tell us a little bit about the organization, what you do exactly, Carlos.
Yeah, for sure. So as a daytime supervisor, because there's many supervisors for the department, the department houses the Utah State Crisis Line, the Utah State Warm Line, the Safe UT app, and also the Mobile Crisis Outreach Team, which is really the community crisis support system. My role is really to support staff in day-to-day operations throughout the daytime hours to make sure staff are supported and meeting the needs of the community.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I want to ask each of you, and we'll start with you first, Christina. What has this pandemic and the impact it has had on the Urban Indian Center? What has it been like? I mean, how big of a challenge has this actually been?
So the pandemic has provided challenges that may be different than some of the mainstream community faced. One of the biggest challenges that we faced beginning about a year and a half ago was really figuring out how to link our community to services. A lot of behavioral health and counseling programs moved to telehealth pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We were not necessarily able to do that, and our community wasn't able to do that as well either. So having access to the technology to be able to access telehealth services was really difficult. And I think that lack of connection, that isolation, it impacted the wider community, but it definitely impacted our Native community when not having the technological access to be able to reach out or connect with people. One of the other kind of impacts for Native Americans living in the city is that we often have family members that are living on the reservation in rural or isolated places that did not have a lot of access to services either. So there's a lot of worry about your family or your community, not just here in the city, but also home on the reservation. Mm-hmm.
Was the Indian community, Christina, reluctant to be tested for COVID-19, be tested and needing help for the mental challenges, the emotional challenges this would bring? Were they reluctant to do so because of fear of really not knowing what it was all about?
I think there was a little bit of that fear. And there's definitely a historical background with accessing different services from the federal government that has had, you know, some effects that have not been great for our Native American communities. But there is this value in most Native communities that the community health as a whole is important.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting that information, sharing that information among Indian country was really important to talk about. What do we need to do to keep safe? What do we need to know about the virus? What do we need to know about vaccine? Why should we be reaching out and talking to each other? There were a lot of different campaigns in Indian country that really talked about how important these things were. And I think when it comes to vaccination rates, in the beginning, the news was really kind of overwhelming and really scary for a lot of Native American people. But the rates of vaccination and the rates of, you know, taking care of our community really kind of skyrocketed. And where we are now, that I know in Utah, I think the Native American population is the second most vaccinated rate in the state.
Yeah. Carlos, what about you? What is this experience during this pandemic for, gosh, now more than a year, almost a year and a half? What has it been like?
I guess to say, like, anecdotally from what the staff has experienced from the callers is really an increase in acute intensity of the issues being brought up. I mean, before, of course, people would be calling in a state of crisis, whether it's for grief or loss, job loss, relationship transition, or depression, anxiety, a whole myriad of different things. But now, with the pandemic hitting, there's always those same variables, but with greater intensity, because now not only are there maybe grieving the loss of a loved one due to COVID-19, we also had an increase of calls of people experiencing isolation or not being to access services as much as they used to because of the pandemic, things were shutting down. So it was definitely hard hit on already marginalized communities in a way. So a lot of that is what I would say was something that, as a staff, we felt that wave of calls come in of that sort of intensity.
That feeling of isolation, did you see it increase dramatically during this period of time?
Dramatic is the subjective word, but I would say yes. Yeah. It was a pretty...
More
like,
so than what you've seen
in
the past.
Yeah, it was noticeably different. Yeah, it was definitely noticeably different because not only typically, you know, when we would get calls of isolation, there would be people who maybe living in housing or maybe part of kind of like the chronically sick population, but we were also getting those same themes among, you know, people who are working from home and their only option was to work from home, from teenagers or people in academia who weren't able to go to school anymore and they were just, you know, participating in school from their room, from their home or from their apartments. And that alone, just a decrease in human connection, I think really takes a toll in our mental health as people.
So. All right. Well, we're talking about the Live On campaign, suicide prevention here in the state of Utah, here on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS and the Rod Arquette Show now. And we're talking right now with Christina Groves and Carlos Palomo. We'll talk more about them. Talk about suicide prevention here in the state and the toll and how Utah is doing in this battle against suicide. We'll talk about that. More coming up, right?
And we'll help you build a full playlist with that same vibe. The free iHeart app. Number one for music, radio, and podcasts all in one.
And ask for help?
I would say the process of actually calling, if I put myself in their shoes, is very difficult. I mean, you're really dialing a number, attempting to talk to a stranger, talk about your most vulnerable experiences, and open up about things that I imagine the person is feeling either judged for or may have some negative self-talk about that, those personal experiences. So I would say it's a difficult action to take. However, I would say in many circumstances is probably a necessary one to kind of spark the momentum to maybe get some long-term care. Because with crisis support, it's really about ensuring safety and then de-escalating a situation so the person in crisis can either get the right support to get the resources that they need or the person in crisis to help them ground themselves so they can feel that they have the capacity to make either tough decisions in their life or to feel like, hey, I can problem solve these array of problems that are in front of me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's a difficult action, but through difficult things are not bad, right?
Yeah.
Difficult things.
And are people reluctant to do it sometime because others, people who they've reached out to are telling them, you need to make a phone call, you need to reach out for help. And they're going, you know, quit telling me that. Let me make the decision, not you.
Yeah, autonomy is huge when it comes to healing. The feeling that I can control aspects of my life or I can control my healing is a big aspect of that. So something that when we have parents call in, for example, saying, hey, my child's experiencing this, they're either being bullied or they're rebelling a lot. Like, what do we do in this situation? A lot of times, you know, we refer them to an app called Safe UT, which is an anonymous app.
Yeah.
Anyone
Great
can text
app, by
it.
The way, I understand. Yeah. It's really, really been successful.
Yeah. Immediately connect with a therapist over just to chat briefly with somebody. And a lot of times the response is, oh, they'll reject that instantly. Like if I say, hey, text this for help, they won't. But a lot of times what we do see is people chatting into the text line saying, hey, I was referred, someone told me about this, and no one knows I'm using it right now, but I do not know where else to turn.
Yeah.
You know, so those are the opportunities of it always goes back to kind of planting seeds, right? And not beating a dead horse with the same messaging, but just planting the seed of saying, hey, this is important. I care about you. This is something you can touch on when you really need it. And I trust that you will when you really need it. And that alone can give someone a lot of empowerment to make that difficult action step and reach out.
Yeah. Christina, your thoughts on people reaching out and using hotlines to look for help. What are some of your thoughts?
I would agree. I think it is really difficult to kind of reach out and ask for help when you are feeling really vulnerable or, you know, worrying about being judged, especially if that's been the response, you know, in the past. And I think at the time when people call the crisis line is when they're struggling the most. So I definitely think that it is really difficult. I think one of the great things about the crisis line and the warm line and the app is that, you know, the education that's been put out into the community about it makes it so that it's everywhere. And it is something that in my work that we talk to almost everybody that walks in the door into our behavioral health program, that there are these resources available. And, you know, we're an outpatient program, so we're only available certain times of the day and certain days of the week. So we're not available all the time. Crises don't always happen, you know, from 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, you know, the more that we can talk about it, the more we can break down that stigma about asking for help. And sometimes, you know, unfortunately, our families are not always able to help us out when we're in crisis. And so being able to have someone who's trained, who is there, who can even just have like a calm voice when you're talking about what's going on, I think is really, really helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that struck me that Carlos was saying is that de-escalation. I think a lot of times when we really care about somebody, it's hard not to get upset as well. So having someone who knows like, okay, I got to de-escalate this situation. Let's get to a place where we can talk about what are the resources or what are the person need in a calm way, I think goes a long way to trying to figure out how do we help this person or how do we help them to keep calling. I have given the number to people that we've worked with throughout my career and gotten feedback that they called. I've had adults use the SafeUT app and get response. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you need help, there is help out there. And I think that's an important message that we need to keep talking about.
Carlos, I would imagine when someone makes a call, they don't know you. They don't know who's on the other end of that line, right? Mm-hmm. How do you work to develop that trust, first and foremost, and that you are willing to listen as well? How do you do that?
Yeah, it's it's a great question. And it's honestly the same skill sets that we would coach or provide feedback to for others who want to know how to connect with someone, which is some elements or some things that are coming to my mind right now is when someone is in a state of crisis, it's a sense that I do not know how to handle the situation. And so as the person on the other receiving end, something that we verbalize on the crisis line or kind of our emphasis is kind of the unconditional positive regard that you don't have to have complete agreement with what the person is experiencing, but validating and understanding and trying to understand the thought process, what someone's going through and an emotional process that someone's going through and intently listening and reflecting back of what you're understanding. Because a lot of times it's about that soundboard effect of I'm expressing my anxieties or I'm expressing my vulnerabilities. Do I get an echo back of someone saying, you know what, although I may not have experienced that, that does make sense. If I was put in that position, I probably may be experiencing some of the things you may be. Mm-hmm. That alone helps someone feel like, okay, I'm not alone in this world. I'm not the crazy one, as someone say. It's I'm a person who feels very overwhelmed, and with the right either primary support systems or the right external community support systems, I can feel grounded in what I'm experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you call somebody on the crisis hotline, Carlos, and find somebody like yourself, and you make a connection with that person making the phone call, they need to make another phone call down the road or again because they're facing another situation. Do they get the same counselor, and is that important to be able to do that?
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? I mean, if you're working to develop that trust and then you're talking to different people all the time, you know, you want the same person because you've developed that trust. Does that happen?
Yeah. So those are where the models I would say are different and delineate a bit, because with outpatient services or like long-term therapy care, there is that long-term rapport building or that long-term relationships that's built to tackle issues that affect the individual for the long term. In crisis support, it's a different world.
Yeah, different beast. Yeah.
So what you're doing is connecting with someone in that vulnerable space in that moment. And then the person, the crisis worker on the other end, what they're determining or what's going through their mind is, okay, what's the root need here? Because at times callers may call in to problem solve. They may feel grounded, but they just don't know how to proceed.
Yeah.
And that's where the crisis worker can say, okay, this is more of a problem solving call. Others are a lot lot more emotional support, that the person may have the tools they need to problem solve it, but emotionally they may feel ungrounded or overwhelmed. And that just requires a different type of approach. It's a logistical versus the emotional support that one needs, you know? So when it comes to building support with that person, is the crisis worker is skilled in picking up the nuances of the conversation and having that authentic, real conversation from the get-go, that we don't beat around the bush. If it's about suicide, we're talking about suicide. If it's about depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, or the limitations of the mental health system, we're having that conversation directly and saying, all right, so in my role, this is how I can support you. Mm-hmm. And if it's outside of our scope or outside of our role, then that's where we use our teams to determine, okay, where can we support you in handing you off to where you can get the support that you need?
I was going to ask you that. If you hand them off to someone that gets this, do you find oftentimes, Christina and Carlos, either one can answer this, that they actually do follow up and they do go, they do take that next step to get some help?
Yeah, that's always the hope, right? And there's no way as
no way to is there any way to gauge it?
Did you have something, Christina?
Kind of.
Okay.
I do think that is one of the gaps, to providing really great mental health care. Mm-hmm. I think we do it in our society really well with medical care, but we're not as good at following up and making sure that when we do hand somebody off, that they are continuing to get where they need to go and that they're continuing to go. And so that is something that, because of the pandemic, I think that we in our community are working to be better at, and we are working to build relationships and figure out, what do our referral processes look like? How do we follow up and make sure that when someone's in a crisis situation that they get to the resource that we provided? And how do we follow up from an administrative point of view, not just from the crisis counselor point of view, to make sure that that we're reducing the barriers that it takes? Because there are a lot of barriers to accessing mental health care, mm-hmm. especially long-term care.
Yeah. Carlos, you want to add to that or add something to that?
Yeah, because what came to mind is the importance of the follow-up. And part of our department, we're also housing the SAMHSA follow-up program, which is people who have expressed suicidal thoughts either in the hospital setting or were discharged with some type of mental health concern. That patient information shared with us, and then we provide a follow-up call around the a day after discharge, 3 days after discharge, a week after discharge, and then a month after, because risk for a suicide attempts, especially if they go into inpatient due to suicide, when they get discharged, the risk is greater. So that follow-up support is so important. And I think that's the integration that the community is heading towards, and it's something that needs to be really focused on, is when someone goes to a doctor visit, it's the human is not just the body, it's the mm-hmm. body, it's the mm-hmm. mind, it's all of the components. So are we checking into all those components? And if there is a red flag or a pink flag that pops up, are we recommending people to take that follow-up care? So that's something that I think integrating into our society, both the medical and the mental health world, is a necessity, really.
Mm-hmm. All right, you're listening to a special one-hour presentation on the Rod Arquette Show tonight as we talk about the Live On campaign and suicide prevention here in the state of
263-7777. Or to learn more, visit revivemenshealth.com.
Rod Arquette Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
easily. You can even make your own radio ad. Just answer a few questions and we'll do the rest. Sign up today at iHeartAdBuilder.com.
All right, welcome back. Final few minutes of the Rod Arkent Show here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS, as we talk about the Live On campaign with iHeartMedia, of course, the state of Utah, and the Strong Auto Group, and we appreciate their support for this effort. Christina Groves has been one of the guests that we've had on tonight from the Urban Indian Center here in Salt Lake City. How did the center get involved in this Live On campaign, Christina?
We were approached by the state of Utah to be involved in the campaign, and received an award through Intermountain Healthcare.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they gave us a lot of flexibility to kind of think about how we were going to be involved in the campaign and what we wanted to do. And one of the things that I really kind of talked about with our team and talked about with the Live On team is that I had never really seen here, you know, in the work that I do in the community, suicide prevention, you know, posters or brochures that actually represented Native American people that I connected with. And so that's really what we did with our campaign, that we worked with a Native American photographer, mm-hmm. that we really talked about our values and our culture and how we wanted to represent that. And so most of the other grant awardees did their campaign up until June of this year. We are actually going to present ours at a walk. We're going to do a suicide prevention walk.
Coming up in September,
In September, the last Saturday of September at Liberty Park. And so we're going to kind of bring out the posters and the brochures. We have some speakers. So we're really excited about that, to be able to unveil what those look like. And then those, I think, will be available, the posters and some of the images on the Live On website as well.
Carlos, we wanted to talk as well about success. And, you know, a challenge to bring a success story, but the success that you have, how do you gauge that?
Yeah, and it was interesting because when I was thinking about success stories, I was trying to think of this kind of grand story to tell.
Yeah,
but really, the most meaningful ones are the ones that kind of come across my table when I'm speaking with staff are really those that, the small ones of a person on CFET text line, a teenager who texts in for a few weeks. They build a relationship with the staff and then say, hey, you know, I was finally able to talk to my school teacher about the bully, or hey, I was able to talk to my parents about what I've been experiencing at school. Other ones that come to mind are, you know, people who are afraid to open up to their partners about needing mental health help. One that kind of struck my mind is a woman who was struggling with postpartum, you know, and there's a lot of judgment about what it means to be a mother or how to care for their child, or that you kind of need to be in all places all at once, you know, and she would call pretty regularly on the crisis line just to kind of vent and talk, but is being able to reach out to your primary support system and say, hey, this issue is this problem that I'm experiencing. I need the additional support. And then we talked briefly about that sense of feeling like a burden. So a lot of it is about helping people feel that lifted from them and realize that part of being human is supporting each other through hard times, mm-hmm. through difficult emotions. And I would count those as the success stories that staff come to me about.
Do both of you feel, final question, we've got about a minute left here. Do both of you feel that we are making progress in this effort? Christina, do you feel we are?
Yeah, I think being able to build these relationships, being able to talk more about this, having a platform to have these kind of candid conversations, I think shows hope for me.
Yeah.
And those, again, is one of our, I think, something that we can count as a success as well.
You know, I had two uncles who died by suicide many, many years ago, and nobody ever talked about it. You know, in the family, my dad had a very large family. The fact that we're talking about it, Carlos, it's got to be viewed as a step in the right direction.
Oh, definitely heading in the right direction with a lot of work ahead of us because it is part of community healing, right? This isn't just let's plug in a service and it fixes things.
Yeah,
this is about everyday people talking with each other and being okay when someone asks you how's your day, not to give a superficial response, but to be honest in our conversations with each other and leaving room for that. That alone, I think, is the fact that we're talking about this in a radio show means that you know, we're heading in a place that's good for all of us.
Yeah, and again, for the work that you do in this community, thank you very, very much. And thanks for coming on the show and talking about this today. It's been great having you.
Yeah, thank you.
Great being here.
All right. Carlos Palomo and Christina Groves have joined us. This has been a second in a series of town hall meetings, we call town hall meetings, where we talk about the Live On campaign and suicide here in the state of Utah. Progress is being made, and we can't be afraid to talk about it. And we need to listen to people and encourage them to reach out and seek help. That is the most important thing that we can do. The state of Utah, we are making progress, and we can make so much more progress by simply talking about it. And that's what the Live On campaign is all about. We want to again thank the Strong Auto Group for their support for this, the state of Utah, and of course, iHeartMedia. That does it for us tonight. As we say each and